It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just said that. RedEyeRadioShow.com, where we stream live. Get our app, put it on your phone, and listen 24-7, 365.
And thank you to our streamers who listen,
yes,
you know, when they want.
Yes.
Not when we want. No, we greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
We don't care when you listen, how you listen, just listen.
Just listen. Would you please? Just
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, see, now I like that one. Now that's accurate. will there be a fourth debate? And we've talked about Joe Rogan here recently.
Yeah, right.
Joe Rogan, the actor, comedian, analyst.
Recent convert to conservative values.
A Bernie Sanders supporter as recently as
just a few
six months ago.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
5 months ago.
Definitely during the primary. Yeah,
yeah, during the without question during the primary.
Yeah, yeah.
He and very, very successful podcast.
Oh yeah,
one of the most listened to podcast in the world.
I think one of the biggest deals ever struck on a podcast level. Yeah.
Yes. President Trump has welcomed the idea of a fourth presidential debate moderated by podcast giant Joe Rogan. Rogan floated a proposed matchup between the president and his Democratic rival Joe Biden during a recent installment of his podcast. First off, I want no one else in the room, just the three of us, Rogan described how his debate would be handled to his guest, retired UFC fighter Tim Kennedy. And you'd have to stream it live so no one can edit it. And I would want them to be there for hours.
Yeah.
And I heard it was 4 hours.
His podcasts are very, very, very long.
Right.
And one thing I've observed is, and they must edit, but no one gets up to go to the restroom. But they're long. I mean, they're hours long. Yeah.
I saw four. Now it says I would want them there 4 hours.
Right.
But I also saw F-O-U-R, that it would be a four-hour debate. If they wanted to do that, they both wanted to come here to Austin, sit down and debate, I would 100% do it. And then on Monday, Kennedy tweeted about their exchange. We talked about that briefly.
Right. Yeah.
And Trump responded, Kennedy tweeted about their exchange on my podcast with Joe Rogan. He offered to moderate a debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. It would be 4 hours with no live audience, just the two candidates, cameras, and their vision of how to move this country forward. Who wants it? Trump tweeted, I do. Wow. The Biden campaign did not immediately respond to Fox News' request for a comment regarding if the former vice president would agree to participate in such a debate. But Rogan suggested that Biden was not up for the challenge. Quote, I don't think that Biden can handle it. I mean, people get mad at me for saying this. I think there's something wrong. And I don't think there's something wrong because I'm guessing or because I'm pro-Trump. I've seen him fall apart.
Yep. Yeah. Look, go back to the MTV town halls, right? The MTV debates and everything else. This is not out of the ordinary. You know, in modern politics, if you look at appearances on late night talk shows by Clinton when he was on Arsenio Hall, or again, the MTV style debates, town hall style debates, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
Oh, so would I. And look, Trump's taking a gamble.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
Trump's taking a gamble because you're talking Joe Rogan, who was loyally behind Bernie Sanders just 6 months ago.
And, you know, I've watched his podcast I watch on YouTube, and I've watched enough of them to know that he's not going to go off a script. He's not going to use anything but his own curiosity And based on what he said about Texas the other day, you know, versus what the left is doing, I'm very curious as to what kind of questions he'd be asking, because he's right. I don't think Biden could do that. He certainly couldn't do it for 4 hours.
Now, what I would request is, you know, he said just the three of them in the room. Now, Secret Service will be, has to be there, of course, in some capacity.
Right.
And all that for both.
Yeah, but
both
no Biden, audience. And
no
yeah.
audience. But as far as I'm concerned, you can put a couple of Secret Service people in the room, but lock the door so nobody can go out for 4 hours.
Yeah, lock the door. may or may not be legal. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, so Biden can't leave.
Well, I mean, but, again, these are all valid points. Yesterday, walking off again, no questions. We've seen it how many times?
And here was the thing that I mentioned this before, and we'll play that audio cut coming up here again before we end the show. Of Biden freaking out about climate change.
Yeah.
But he turned around and walked off the stage, and then I saw the cut-in from MSNBC, and they said, oh, well, we went to the last portion of that. They didn't carry the whole thing, apparently. Yeah. So we went to the last portion of it because we were hoping that Biden would answer some questions, take some questions, but he did not. So everybody notices it now.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You can't hide from it. Because they're going to him to see if he'll take any questions
yeah.
because they want to promote Biden, and they know that most of the questions are going to be friendly. And yeah. and so even, for example, on MSNBC, who is, of course, pro-Biden, wants to see him answering some questions.
Yeah.
They see Trump out there every single day and Biden just doing these low-key interviews and then or not interviews, but I mean, well, sometimes he does a low-key interview or with the Cardi B, a very high-key, makes no sense.
Yeah.
Almost like a speed enhanced.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Anybody do speed anymore? I mean, I just.
Yeah. I don't know.
What are the kids doing these days?
What are those wacky kids ingesting these days?
What are the drugs we're doing these days?
Right.
Is ecstasy long gone? I mean, I don't know. I just.
Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know.
What are the kids doing these days? Acid? I mean, it's.
If you have any drug dealers out there, call us and let us know about your supply and demand.
Cocaine. I mean, heroin we know is still out there. I mean, does anybody do powder cocaine anymore?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, every once in a while you'll see this person or that person charged with possession of this or that drug. But I don't know at what level it's in play. You go back to the 70s. I was a 70s kid, but you go back to the disco era and all the, you know, clubs and the all the stories about drugs just freely flowing at those clubs.
Yeah, well, in the 70s, remember, Jenny almost, you know, was going to jump off that apartment skyscraper listening to Leonard Skinner
right,
in Forrest Gump. You know,
right, yeah. You know, I mean, it's, but...
I'm sorry. Well, that's you said 70s. That's the first thing that came to my mind.
Right.
Was her in Forrest Gump.
I love you, Jenny. But, you know, the whole thing is I think to observe where we are. Speaking of Rogan, he smoked pot with Elon Musk on his podcast one time.
Pull out a joint, smoking with Biden.
Right. Right. Go to town. You know, but
oh my God.
Are other drugs socially acceptable after legalization in so many states? You imagine, okay, that would be odd. To he can't answer a question anyway. But what kind of rambling would he go on, Joe Biden, if he and the other Joe lit up?
Yeah. I don't think Musk has done that again, has he?
No. You know, when you're the CEO of a publicly traded company, it's best that you not engage in that publicly, and you only do things that are... I don't know if... I'm guessing that was legal. Where was he based in? Was he in New York? Before Austin?
No.
He was out West Coast, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think California. Okay. But yeah, I mean, probably not a good idea to do it again.
I mean, if he can do that, why can't our, why won't our management allow us to do, like, just have a few cocktails on the air? It'd loosen us up a
little bit. You're saying they don't? I saw another show the other day where somebody had bourbon in their desk. I'm like, okay, really? Is that really happening? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're totally out of touch.
But no, I would. By the way, I would be against that. I'd be asleep. Imagine 11:30 throwing down a couple of.
Well, it's and
a couple of mixed drinks. Right. I'd be asleep by 1 o'clock.
Now the production crew is saying it might improve the show, but who knows? But honestly, the pop culture aspect of it isn't new, and I would love to see a debate.
Okay, we're off of drugs and onto the debate.
Right, we're back onto.
I would think that'd be great. It'd be really interesting because it would be completely off, just off the beaten track. It's not what we're used to, mm-hmm. and you would actually get them to be in depth. Now, it's not going to happen. Biden's campaign's never going to agree to it whatsoever. But it is going to be used. By the president, he's going to say, "Why not?"
Yeah, I would agree to do it. Why doesn't Joe agree to do it?
And Joe Rogan has a podcast, one of the most popular podcasts in the United States. He has done well. We compliment him for that because it is the new area of broadcasting. And somebody like Rogan, whether I agree with him on all the issues or not, doesn't matter. You know, you and I have talked about this before. We started in talk radio when. You know, we worked at radio stations where liberals, when talk radio first started out, it was because of the fairness doctrine. Initially, it was you'd have some conservatives, some liberals, whatever. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work out. You couldn't market it.
Right.
But we, you know, I've had liberal talk show host friends, acquaintances for years. And when Air America went down, I didn't like it. I'm a broadcaster. You're a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. We've only really ever wanted to do radio. Right. I have no inkling to do a TV show. Right. I don't care to write a book. It's not what I do. Right. I do this. And so I look at this, and I know you think the same way. The more, the better. If there's liberal talk out there that can survive, I want it in our broadcasting industry. Joe Rogan, we complimented him on his success when he was still – we question him on the substance of what he was talking about, mm-hmm. but we always complimented him as a broadcaster and being a trailblazer, you know, of really being able to get a huge audience podcasting.
Yeah,
and it's going to help all of us down the line. And this may be a little bit of inside business talk, but it's the reality of, you know, what where the business is going. So anybody who's making great strides, we compliment him. Trump is taking a chance, too, because this is the guy who loyally supported Bernie Sanders and didn't like Trump just like 6 months ago, and I believe the riots changed him.
The riots completely changed Joe Rogan. Which was the point that, you know, you brought the story up, and the point of bringing that story, as you mentioned then, was that might be an indicator that other people are actually thinking this way post-riots.
Yeah.
I mean, are the riots the major motivating factor, the major driver in this election cycle? I think they're a huge impact. I can't measure it. But when you see someone like Joe Rogan say that, now... I don't think it's coincidence that he just signed this massive, massive tens of millions of dollars in a deal with Spotify, because now you're going to want to keep more of your money and not, you know, give it to the state government or federal government. And Texas is one of those great states that doesn't charge you. We don't have an income tax on the state level. Having said that, the motivating factor, again, with enough, because Rogan's far from center. The independent,
mm-hmm.
Or at least has been up until lately. What is the impact on that person in the middle? Because you look at those images day in, day out. Look how desperate they are to try and pretend that it's not happening. Krugman, look, there are no riots here. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Well, why are they doing that? Because they know
the image
that it's a loser.
Yeah.
It's a loser. And I think even if all the riots went away this week, I think it still sits in the back of people's minds on November 3rd. I think people look at that and they're going to make a decision based on that, because you look at the horrible leadership by mayors in these liberal cities based on that and COVID thing, you know, wanting to shut everything down, keeping everybody inside. We said with COVID, this isn't a right or left thing, wanting to reopen, you know, wanting to be able to go out to the beach, you know, all these things, they're not left and right. It's mm-hmm. It's how people think. It's how they yep. behave. It's human behavior that drives that. And I wonder how many people right now are looking at the riots saying, I can't vote for that side.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Did you know that up to half of all major engine failures are due to poor cooling system maintenance? That's a lot of downtime and can cost drivers big. You expect a lot from your engine, which is why the cooling system must be a part of your maintenance routine. Here's a tip to keep your cooling system in shape and your engine running smooth. Inspect your radiator, belts, and hoses for potential failures and deterioration, especially ahead of winter. Check the condition of your coolant to ensure it's at the optimum freeze point. Inadequate freeze protection levels can result in cracking of lines or passages. If you find insufficient freeze point levels or any wear and tear, find a TA truck service near you to have these issues repaired by technicians you can trust.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll get to more of your calls and comments coming up following the bottom of the hour if you would like to get in. I just think the fourth debate is a very interesting, not something that's going to happen, but just as a political event. It is huge because, as I mentioned, Rogan has a, you know, very, very hip and young listenership.
Right.
And he's part of popular culture. He crosses a ton of different boundaries. And if Trump is saying over and over again, I'm willing to go on Joe Rogan, that becomes part of pop culture. And Biden's not going to do it. Trump's going to keep I guarantee he's going to keep hitting. Why wouldn't he go up with Joe Rogan? Everybody loves Joe. Joe's a great guy. Look, Joe was look, I'm taking a gamble. Joe was going to vote for Bernie.
Right.
Yeah. He liked Bernie. You know, I'm willing to go on. Let's talk. Let's have the discussion. It really helps the Trump campaign.
Yeah. And you add to it the fact that Ducklow, Biden's campaign director, out in the media and wouldn't answer very simple questions recently. And so we said, well, when he didn't say no, the answer effectively is yes.
On teleprompter.
On the whole teleprompter question. But then beyond that, you apply that here. If you're Biden, you know, and you're looking for any kind of in with the far left, the Bernie supporters, right? Mm-hmm. Which again, he's one. Joe Rogan is one. Then at that point, you're looking to go in. I would be eager to go do that to make inroads with the far left, if nothing else. So if he says no,
I don't know if the far left's happy with Rogan now.
Right. Well, I'm talking about Joe Biden making inroads, you know, with trying to appeal to the far left, who still is on board with Rogan and his podcast. He still has.
Oh, yeah. Significant they're listening. They're listening.
Right.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
A mass of chaos and anarchy every damn night. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Ed in New York City. Ed, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Ed. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
Very good.
I'm calling because I think Trump has advantages that are not even discussed in the media. First of all, Trump is the head of a large movement unlike anything we've seen in political history. Certainly, I'm 63 years old. I've never seen anything like that in my lifetime. There's never been a politician with this kind of mass movement behind him. Two, he's the incumbent, and usually incumbent presidents win. Three, Biden came in fifth in the New Hampshire primary. That's the opposite of a movement candidate. I don't know of anybody who ever came in fifth in the New Hampshire primary who won. Certainly, he doesn't have anywhere near the support Hillary Clinton had, and she wasn't a good candidate. And fourth, I think the judge's ruling today in Pennsylvania declaring that the Constitution has to be restored, and that is a Trump-appointed judge, is a very, very important. In fact, I think that will become historic. This is a very important ruling that the government, that these little Mussolinis around the country cannot keep the Constitution at bay forever, that eventually the Constitution has to be restored. We have to have our rights restored.
That's why we had quite a bit of discussion to lead the show off on that ruling. We'll see where that goes with the appeals court and further from that. Now, as for Trump's movement, that it's unprecedented, that could be up for debate. He does have a passionate movement. Ross Perot had a huge movement behind him based on the issues.
Yeah.
So I can look at, you know, you look at, for example, Ross Perot and the movement that he had before he dropped out of the race and then came back in again and lost all credibility. So that movement was short-lived because Ross Perot helped to destroy that. And by the way, I like Ross Perot.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I would have voted for him because of certain things that he was talking about. For example, to have that 50-cent a gallon gas tax, I completely disagreed with that he was promoting when he was running for office.
Yeah.
Now, as for a political movement in the last 30 years, based on issues and based on specific issues, I would agree with you that Trump has a huge movement behind him. Obama had a huge movement behind him in 2008.
Yeah. I guess the only key difference would be hope and change kind of meant everything to everybody.
Yes.
Make America great again. The left wants you to believe it's about, you know, being a nationalist or, you know, having, I don't know, some kind of fear of people coming into the country or whatever it might be, but they fail miserably. The campaign from the beginning has been about, again, improving things here at home. For Obama, the euphoria was there and the hope and change was kind of everything to everybody. Now, it worked politically for him.
Right. Politically it worked, but he doesn't, when Trump is out of office, especially if Trump wins again, and he's going to remain a popular figure in American politics for a long time because everything that Trump was about substance.
Right.
You know where he stands.
Yes.
Immigration, the economy, what he wanted to do, illegal immigration, sanctuary cities, the economy, trade, foreign policy. You know, you and I talked about his foreign policy, which is isolationist to a point.
Yeah.
That Trump may not, because the message of the Trump administration right now is look, we don't want to get involved in wars. We have no problem killing your leaders, especially if it's legally justified. Mm-hmm. If we can legally justify it, we're not going to go to war. We'll kill your leaders.
Yeah,
Soleimani.
Right.
We'll go after the terrorists. And since so many of the enemies you're truly concerned about are in the form of terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
Who have attacked American interest and killed Americans, at that point, he has put out the fact, look, I don't want to go to war. I have no problem killing your terrorist leaders.
Right.
And targeting them. And that changes the entire ballgame because you're an isolationist to a point.
Well, yes. And it's interesting because years ago, you know, I said we as a nation collectively, we don't have a stomach for war any longer. You know, we be because we, you know, at that point, we were in Iraq still, we were in Afghanistan still, and we got plenty of critics that said, look, you guys are wrong, but the polls showed it. The end of, or I would say, the second term of George W. Bush was a very different tone. And so being an isolationist, I think, for the president in 2020 helps, as it's being demonstrated, as you point out, with Soleimani, the killing of Soleimani. That demonstrates he's willing to take care of the problem and not always willing to go to war for the smallest of problems. And that's, right, again, the political message. Mm-hmm. We can talk about his foreign policy in Syria or anywhere else and have a discussion on it. We're talking about the political stance, right, and appealing to those in the center, in the independent.
So Obama had a huge political movement in 2008 that was smaller, sure, in 2012, but it was based basically on a slogan, and he was an establishment candidate.
Right.
He was an establishment candidate from the very, very beginning, you know, promoted and supported by the party. All right. Now, Ross Perot, no. Ross Perot is in his own party and you know, ran as an independent. And so, you know, you saw, so there was incredible power in what he did, but he didn't win because he pulled out. So right, you got to sit there and say, sorry, he gets an incomplete for political movements. Trump succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he came like Perot did. He came completely from the outside, without really with some political support from Republicans, but a lot of enemies inside the Republican Party also.
Yeah.
And part of the reason that he ran, though, and this is really interesting because I love it how politics evolves. We forget the establishment of the swamp used to be the Republican leadership.
Yeah.
That's no longer the swamp. Isn't that amazing?
Well, his supporters, Trump's supporters in after the election, we're screaming, don't keep Paul Ryan as the speaker. You know, get rid of Paul Ryan, get rid of the swamp, the old establishment Republican. And now the swamp has become, you know, deep state, Capitol Hill on the left, and, you know,
right,
that kind of approach. But this is exactly where I think the president wants to be. You look at what the left is doing right now, and everything is built on emotion. And the president clearly taking advantage of his accomplishments in his first term, I think, and demonstrating what those benefits are to all Americans. Like it or not, you know, people look at it, you know, for, okay, what are you going to do for me? How are you going to improve my life? What are you going to put in place? What do you believe in? Even if he doesn't get the massive tariff deal done that he, you know, promised in 2016, it doesn't matter. If he looks like the guy that's wanting to protect American jobs, that's a win for him.
This is from thehill.com. Democrats are growing worried about Democratic nominee Joe Biden's play it safe strategy with 50 right. days to go in the election. They are specifically worried that as President Trump's campaign reaches millions of voters through in-person door-knocking events and big rallies, the Biden campaign is relying on digital organizing and phone outreach. On a field training call over the weekend, several veterans of the Obama and Hillary Clinton presidential campaigns expressed concerns to Carolyn Gray, a Biden campaign aide, who co-founded the Democratic digital firm Civis Analytics. Ex-Obama aides also grumbled privately following the Saturday Zoom call, which had been aimed specifically at getting Obama alumni more active in the final stretch of Biden's campaign. Hmm. After the call, one former Obama aide said that if Biden loses a close election, analysts will look back on the field operations in the same way they look back on Hillary Clinton's decisions not to visit Wisconsin in 2016. Hmm. If Biden loses, this will be his not going to Wisconsin. Biden has wrapped his campaign around a follow the science approach to the coronavirus, ripping Trump for his handling of the pandemic. His campaign pivoted away from in-person contacts once the pandemic struck, while encouraging voters to mail in ballots. Those wanting Biden to do more traditional campaign events understand the argument They just worry it will backfire. It goes against the grain of everything about a campaign in the final days, said one attendee.
Hmm.
So, and we have, we've talked about that, over and over again. Sure. About, the Trump campaign going door to door to door to door. Look, and the Republicans, we said this earlier on, Democrats believe it's fine to open up casinos, right?
Yeah.
It's fine to have protests.
Mm-hmm.
Is a political convention? Is it a political convention or political rallies? Are they as important to a society as casinos, as protests? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so the Democrats' failure to understand that could be, could be problematic for Joe Biden.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, again, we point out the clear distinction between the two parties right now. And it's very clear. If you can't see it, you're not looking.
Well, especially, look, we're protecting our elderly.
Mm-hmm.
Our seniors, can't use the word elderly.
You can't say elderly?
I can't say elderly. That we're, we're,
what about old people?
People, the codgers out there like me, almost. But most families are protecting the older members of their family.
Yeah, right.
They're isolating them. Mm-hmm. But most people are out and about. Most people are out and about every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And so this thing that we must completely hide still, I don't think is as important as it might have been for a campaign 3 months ago.
No, you're right. And the more we return to normal or get closer to normal, it's like the GDP. It's all relative, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what you look at, because returning to normal is going to, again, bring things out, and it could be a last-minute decision by any given voter in the middle. When we start opening more and more things, they're going to start looking at the world more and more as, or the, our society, the country, as a free market capitalist society where liberty rules. And I want to be able to go out and do the things I want to do. I want to go back to work, open things up so I can go back to work and so I can get my life back. We'll see if that actually happens between now and November 3rd, but I suspect many of the judges and mayors in those areas are not going to open things up fully between now and November 3rd. In fact, I would bet a good amount of money that they won't be doing that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And just wonder if the polling that they're doing, the internal polling showing that the economy and how the economy is going to rebound is more important. The Trump campaign going to spend $10 million here just in the next couple of weeks on focusing on the economy.
Right.
And there's Bernie Sanders. Not enough to attack Trump. We have to give people a reason to vote for Biden. And he's talking on all the economic issues out there. He said, now we have done 8 battleground states, virtual rallies, talking to several million people. And I think what people want to hear is what Joe's going to do to raise the minimum wage, what he's going to do to make sure we create millions of good paying jobs in the country, and that he has a very strong plan on the infrastructure. He knows that we can create jobs combating climate change. And, that's because of the wildfires and all that. But what he's saying is he's not talking about those things.
Right.
Like yesterday, except for, very briefly, he's talking about the wildfires. Wall Street Journal did a whole thing saying, what's Biden talking about? Democrats are saying, look, forest management. He never mentioned forest management once.
No.
Said even Gavin Newsom, in talking to the president on Monday. What day are we today? It's Tuesday.
Right.
said we disagree on this, but we agree on better forest management is needed. Everybody knows that's the case. Even liberals know better forest management is needed.
Right.
So wildfires don't come into the suburbs.
Yeah.
Biden never mentions it at all. And so
also never mentioned that He's for fracking.
Or he's for fracking, exactly. Right. And his boss was saying, wait a minute, it's not Trump. We're the reason that there was a resurgence of oil.
Right.
That was my time.
Yeah.
And as we know, he tried to kill it at every opportunity, but he wasn't able to do it. Actually, the fossil fuel industry grew despite him trying to stop it.
Right. Exactly.
But the fact that he wanted credit for it shows you how important they know it is. Or, again, the pull and tug. They don't know where to go. They don't know where. Obama didn't know where to go on it. Yeah. Now Biden doesn't know where to go. No, I've always been for fracking. Everybody knows that's a load of horse soup.
Yes.
Soup is the word I'm going to throw in from now on.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a crock. And they know it.
Which is where you put soup in.
Exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Welcome to Red Eye Radio. RedEyeRadioShow.com, where we stream live, get our app, put it on your phone, and listen when you wish to listen. Is there a change in the Biden campaign? We go to Kamala Harris yesterday speaking, and this raised a few eyebrows.
Sure. You have a president in the White House who actually sees you, who understands your needs, who understands the dignity of your work, and who has your back. A Harris administration together with Joe Biden as the president of the United States, the Biden-Harris administration.
Wait. Whoa. And whoa. What in the world just happened?
Not yet. Shh, not yet. The economic plan under the Harris administration with the Joe Biden administration.
Ouch.
Under the Joe Biden Harris administration.
Yeah. We didn't mean to exclude Joe, but I'm just saying what most people are already thinking. Pretty funny.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden out on the campaign trail yesterday, of course, talking climate change.
It's ridiculous. But you know what is actually threatening our suburbs? Wildfires are burning the suburbs in the West. Floods are wiping out suburban neighborhoods in the Midwest. Hurricanes are imperiling suburban life along our coast. If we have four more years of Trump's climate denial, how many suburbs will be burned in wildfires? How many suburban neighborhoods will have been flooded out? How many suburbs will have been blown away in superstorms?
Well, we commented on it in the beginning of the show, and I happened to come upon the Wall Street Journal editorial yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
Biden of the climate apocalypse.
Yeah.
He gives a speech on wildfires and never mentions better forest management. Sometimes we wonder if Joe Biden writes anything in his public remarks other than the words, quote, here's the deal, end of quote.
Yeah, right.
An example is the Democratic's nominee big speech Monday on West Coast wildfires, in which he never mentioned the need for better forest management.
Oh, really?
The younger Joe Biden would never have allowed that kind of political malpractice, but his handlers let him deliver a lengthy speech that blame the fires, Hurricane Laura and Sally, flooding on the coast, the windstorms in the Midwest, and the hot summer, among other events, on the fury of climate change everywhere, all this year and right now. It's as if he saw the apocalyptic climate change melodrama some years back the day after tomorrow and decided to become Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, right. Well,
it seems glib. How else to describe a speech that claims to reverse science but is utterly detached from it? On the wildfires, Mr. Biden's failure to mention the need to clear dry and diseased fallen trees defies what has gradually been recognized as a necessity even on the environmental left. Decades ago, forestry consensus changed from active management to letting nature take its course. Controlled burns that once cleared rotting underbrush was stopped. Logging the thinned forest was declined amid green political opposition. One unintended result, especially in dry summers or extended drought, were millions of acres of brush that became fuel for raging fires. Add the spread of housing into more distant suburbs, and the risks to people and property have grown. As even the climate change true believers at the New York Times put the other day, millions of Americans are moving into wildfire-prone areas outside of cities, and communities often resist restrictions on development. A century of federal policy to aggressively extinguish all wildfires rather than letting some burn at low levels, an approach now seen as misguided, has left forests with plenty of fuel for especially destructive blazes. That's a quote from the New York Times. Does Mr. Biden's campaign read the liberal newspapers? Even Democratic Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, agrees for the need for better forestry. After the wildfires last year, his state agreed with the federal government to reduce the fire risks on 1 million acres a year of dry forest tinder for 5 years. Meeting with President Trump on Monday in California, Mr. Newsom disagreed on climate policy, but said there's no question that we have not done justice on our forest management. I want to thank you for supporting that effort. As for climate and hurricanes, sigh. That's what they actually write. Sigh.
Yeah, right.
Let's repeat, there is little evidence that storm frequency and the modest global warming of the last century are linked. As scientist Robert Pelkey has noted, hurricanes hitting the U.S. have not increased in frequency or intensity since 1900. NOAA has said the same thing. It is premature to conclude that human activities, particularly greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warmings, have already had a detectable impact on Atlantic hurricane or global tropical cyclone activity. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change also says, too, it lacks evidence to show warming is making storms and flooding worse. It doesn't matter what the facts are, but what we thought, two things that we really thought were incredible over the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Biden giving a climate change talk and talking about if Trump is elected that suburbs will be burned in wildfires, suburban neighborhoods flooded out, suburbs blown away in superstorms, and who has emphasized over and over again that he's for fracking?
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. After saying he wasn't for fracking, now he is for fracking, and we always remember the famous speech from President Obama a year after he was in office when Trump was saying, hey, look at all the oils being produced. And he said, that's me.
Yeah.
That was me that started in my administration. So they want credit for it at the same time that they damn the consequences of it. Can't have it both ways.
No, you can't be pro jobs. You know, that's like Biden saying, no, I'm pro fracking when it comes to the jobs, but not the global warming part.
Right.
You don't get to pick and choose. Over the years, you and I have covered, I don't know how many different campaigns collectively or political seasons collectively, but let's just say it's more than one. Well, have you ever seen it where they're trying to say one thing, and I mean something so blatant, like banning fracking? No, I'm pro-fracking. Where the flip flop is on the fly on major issues at their core. You can say during 2016 the whole visa thing with Trump back and forth, but he didn't abandon his core of strong border security. You can look at a number of things over the years where plenty of flip flopping going on. But they're doing it from one day to the next and making it seem like they take both positions. Is there any self-awareness in the campaign at all, the Biden campaign? I really haven't seen anything like this. It's like they're just bouncing off of walls. It's like watching a pinball.
Yeah, it's just when you think about that, and the other thing was that Pelosi coming out the other day and saying that Trump's Middle East peace agreements are just a distraction from COVID. and the beautiful thing is, here's where the Democrats are now. The Democrats are now against Republicans. Instead of Republicans going to war or shooting down something that used to be a distraction, right? Democrats would say, see?
Wagging the dog.
Right.
Yeah.
Wagging the dog. Actually, that started with Clinton.
Yeah, right.
That whole point. But, hey, the president is going to war in order to distract you. And Nancy Pelosi now is stating, Trump and the Republicans are going to peace to distract you from COVID.
Right. They're doing good things only to distract you.
And they're peaceful things.
Right.
Not war things.
Right.
Peace things. Doggone it. Will you please stop with the Middle East peace agreements?
Right.
That are detracting from what's going on? And it used to be the president's only attacking the Middle East to distract you from the failures of his administration. Right. Now it's the Republicans and Donald Trump and their Middle East peace agreements are horrible because they're just a distraction from COVID.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, just amazing stuff.
Well, it tells you, it really demonstrates more and more every single day that they have nowhere to go. On the issues, they know they're losing. On the riots, they know they're losing. They know it. And so what do? You blame it on Trump.
Democrat, I can see this should be the headline. Headline, Democrats against Meese. Democrats are against peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's and the whole pro fracking thing. Really, is there any self-awareness on the left right now?
No.
Because if there were, they would be forced to, well, not forced, but driven to talk the issues. And the truth kills them.
Donald Trump has more self-awareness with what he says right now than the Democrats do.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, I mean,
and you can make the case that not all the times has he been very self-aware when he said something. Do you know how that's going to come back and haunt you tomorrow?
Right, exactly.
Did you listen to what you just said? But right now, he is the adult and the critical common sense thinker. They're just nuts.
Right.
Everything. That was my favorite, though. I don't know if anything's going to beat that one. Trump getting peace in the Middle East is just a distraction. I mean, that
as Trump's getting nominated again for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, I know that one was really, really good. You know, I just have to check now. I know we're doing a radio show, but I have to check the Babylon Bee.
There has to be something there, right? Well, because what can you do politically to combat, you know, the positives that are going on and the praise he's getting from other world leaders based on these deals, these peace deals. All right, what do you got?
I'm sorry. I didn't even get to the front page. I'm going to put into Google, Biden getting excited as segregation coming back in style.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Governor Newsom orders all trees to wear masks to prevent spread of wildfires.
That's funny. That's hilarious. But they can't talk about the true things in life. They can't in our society right now. Politically, it only does them damage. So the only thing they're left to do is what? Lie. Or say something as bizarre as what Pelosi said. He's only distracting from COVID by doing major peace deals in the Middle East. Wow.
Courageous NBA player simply puts his name on the back of his jersey. Oh, my. Audience boos as football game breaks out at political rally.
Yeah.
Pope right. is no longer the world's most respected a Christian.
Mm.
My pillow guy is.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. I mean, they're just beautiful ones. I mean, just absolutely. Oh, this is one. The Academy strips Schindler's List of Best Picture Award due to lack of diversity.
Wow. Wow. That is a great, great, great parody.
California is the progressive utopia of the future, says Gavin Newsom, who is currently on fire.
Oh, my gosh. Is it easier for the Babylon Bee? It has to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not necessarily. It's not easy to be funny, but I mean, it's observational humor based on very real things.
Responding,
they're getting a gold mine every day.
Responding to backlash, Netflix clarifies its content is mostly pedophile free.
Oh my gosh! Wow. Mostly, the overwhelming majority of content. Wow, that's great. Yeah.
Wow.
What do you do if you're on Biden's team?
I don't know, because we've seen Biden's team. They can't do any better explaining what he thinks than
Duckworth. Duckworth was horrible over the weekend.
Duck low.
Duckworth, what did I say? Duckworth? Duck something.
Duck. Duckworth sponsored.
Is it Low Duck or Duck Low?
No, Duckworth okay. sponsored the Mighty Ducks.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Duckworth. Is that a cartoon character or Disney? I don't know. But even Duck Low, seriously, it's funny that he has that name in his current position. But it is, it has to be a massive effort. We talked about in the first year or two with President Trump. If you're someone who's a White House spokesperson at that point, that has to be very difficult, right? Because you might be saying something to the media in the press briefing, and then an hour later, or maybe even at the same time, the president was tweeting something very different, right? Or saying something very different.
And by the way, that's why with the first couple of years, it was viewed that the administration and the White House was completely disorganized
right.
is because of the different messages coming out. It's not a problem these days, is it?
No.
At all.
No.
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 Nope.
And now what do you have with the Biden? And look, Biden's not new to this. But you wonder, how in the world do you control his message when you can't control him?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Residents along the Gulf Coast of eastern Louisiana and southern Mississippi are bracing for the arrival Tuesday of what will likely be Hurricane Sally, which could produce a major storm surge, possibly 1 to 2 feet of rain. And as to the probable track,
from an agricultural standpoint, I really can't think of a better storm track because it's going to pass between two major cropping areas.
Agriculture Department meteorologist Brad Rippey, he says, don't set this in stone. However,
on the present expected track, it should spare most crops in the Delta, and that would include cotton, which bolls are opening and highly vulnerable to wind and rain, and also rice, which is generally ready to be harvested now across the Delta and could be impacted by high winds and heavy rain.
And Sally might also miss the heavily cropped areas of southwestern Georgia northeastward into the Atlantic coastal plain. However, Rippey says if the storm tracks just a bit west of the forecast path, not only could there be major crop damage, but Sally could track into New Orleans, causing major flooding. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara.
Here's your forecast.
Hurricane Sally, sitting and spinning in the Gulf of Mexico, was expected to make landfall yesterday. We're now moving things into later tonight. The current track brings the system in between Biloxi and Mobile, Alabama, along I-10, and should make landfall as a Category 2 storm with winds between 96 and 110 miles per hour. The real difference here on this system will be the rain as well, as up to 20 inches can be expected in the region. A sure sign the fall pattern is establishing itself. We have frost and freeze warnings for Maine and portions of upstate New York, where temperatures this morning will dip down into the 20s. Dallas, Texas will see a slight chance of rain today with a high near 90. For Atlanta, those rain chances continue all week, high today 80. For New York City, it'll be 70 degrees in Central Park today under sunny conditions. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
The Poster Child Radio Show of 2020, Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, true. And yeah, we're not going to forget this year, are we?
No, we are not. I'd like to, but no.
I'll be, you know, sitting in the rocking chair 30 years from now, you know, talking. Well, kids, you know, when I was young, we lived through, just like our parents lived through the recession.
Yeah.
Right. Or the depression, excuse me. Yeah, we lived through 2020.
Yeah, exactly. Just 1 year.
Yeah, but the depression lasted a number of years. Oh, 2020 was worse, youngins.
We had to settle for $600 a week from the government. Who can survive on that?
One of the things that's lost completely in the riots and Black Lives Matter, it not really, the conservatives have made note of it, the liberals completely ignore it, yeah, has been the attack on Black police chiefs,
right, yeah,
and Black police officers. It's something that a lot of America has paid attention to, which brings the whole thing, is this really about race? We have talked about how many of the accusations of police brutality come from the major cities that have been Democrat run for the longest time, many of them with Black mayors and Black police chiefs.
Right.
As we know, the Rochester police chief was fired yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Martha McCallum on Fox News talked to the Detroit police chief, James Craig, yesterday. He has said he will not resign because he is under pressure now to resign. And she asked him all the questions. She asked him the questions that are most important here, which is really what's going on.
Well, thank you, Mike.
You know, in the face of all of the violence that we've seen across the country and these incidents, there are, I think, 20 police chiefs now who have resigned. And you have also been called on to resign. And I just want to point out that that one of those individuals in Rochester, Laurent Singletary of Rochester, said that he was going to step down tonight. We just learned that the mayor there has decided that she's not going to let him do that. He's been fired. So he is now out as well. Why do you resist leaving when so many have just said they just can't take it anymore?
You know, I got to tell you, Martha, it's clear to me what's really going on. It's not about who the police chief is sitting in the seat, whether the police chief is Black, whether he's white, Asian, male, female. It's deeper than that. If you talk against this group, you must go. That's their attitude. I've taken a firm stand here in Detroit. I've been supported by Detroiters. Let me just say, Detroiters want them gone. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not leaving. They have to leave. And I've said it publicly, both locally and nationally. And I'm going to hold my ground because our men and women who serve deserve much better than this. And I got to say, Martha, if I can, please, I just want to pray for those two officers out the Los Angeles County Sheriff. So I spent 28 years of my career in the LAPD. And so it's despicable. I'm angry about it. A coward who's part of this whole agenda. That's what's going on today. We need to call it what it is.
Yeah. A while back, I interviewed the person in charge of Black Lives Matter in Greater New York. And he has said that, you know, once if a black person becomes a cop, they're no longer a black person. They're blue. What would you say to him if you had the opportunity?
That's ridiculous. I've been an African-American male all my life. I started in this business 44 years ago, 10 years after civil unrest in the city of Detroit. I've been a proud African-American. I rose through the ranks. Nobody gave me anything. So for him to say that, who does he call? Who does his family call when they need help? They call the police.
No doubt. I want to play this. This is from Senator Ed Markey, who just won a tight election in Massachusetts. He is saying that we must disarm officers. There's a lot of back and forth over what it means to defund the police, but he's really laying it out quite clearly. This is Ed Markey. Portland police routinely attack peaceful protesters with brute force. We must disarm these officers and every other police department in America of weapons of war and enact a nationwide ban on tear gas, rubber and plastic bullets, and beanbag rounds. What would you say to Ed Markey, sir?
Absolutely ridiculous. You know what I find fascinating, Martha? And even Rashida Tlaib here out of my state here in Michigan, who is calling for me to resign. Mm-hmm. Let me just say this. When are we going to start talking about disarming criminals? I've been on the record. I support law-abiding citizens to be armed. But criminals? And so it's okay to attack police officers. And then everyone always says one thing. These were peaceful protesters. So I guess when you're throwing Molotov cocktails, railroad spikes, other projectiles, you're using green lasers, I guess that constitutes being peaceful. Yeah. We have never tried to stop folks from their right to free speech. We've been dealing with this for in excess of 100 days, six instances where we've had to use force because they were either attacking us or they resisted a lawful arrest. Enough is enough. And I got to tell you, shame on that city manager out there in California. If anybody needs to step down instead of the police chiefs, he needs to go.
There you go. And and by the way, there's going to be pressure, I believe, for Chief James Craig to resign. Sorry, he's right. You can't hold that opinion. And what an embarrassment. People of Massachusetts, Senator Markey, what an embarrassment to have such a flake as, you know, as your one of your representatives to the federal government. What an idiot he is. We need to disarm cops and take away all of their, you know, base their weapons from them. These people are nuts. They're really, I mean, they seriously, there's something wrong in their heads.
Yeah, there is. And I look at it and think to myself, well, keep talking. If that's the way you feel, please stay on it. Because you're doing nothing but hurting your political party. That's insane. And everybody knows it.
And you know, she brought up that what we've talked about, you know, before many times. Martha McKellman interviewed the head of the New York Black Lives Matter, who said, once you become a cop, you're no longer, you know, once if you're black and become a cop, you're no longer black. We remember when the when was that said again? Was that in South Carolina? Was that? But that's been said before.
Yeah.
That, black cops aren't black. They're blue. You know, what a horrible thing. You know, what a horrible thing to say that if you're for law and order. And remember, and I think it's really amazing because it came from somebody who was just recently a Bernie Sanders supporter. But when Joe Rogan, who we mentioned before, said, don't they understand? Only with law and order can you truly be free.
Right.
Law and order is what makes it so every individual can be free and everybody can have the opportunity to express their freedom of speech.
Yeah.
All of their rights. You have the opportunity to do all of your rights when you have law and order. When you don't have law and order, you have no rights.
Right.
Because somebody can take it from you like that, and that's why the police are so important out there. So It's to the point of pure insanity. And yeah, I'm glad that Senator Markey, I'm glad he said what he said,
right?
Because then we get the honesty from, you know, from him. Yeah. He's not sugarcoating it. He's just he is just completely and totally unacceptable as a representative to the federal government from Massachusetts. And anybody that voted for him in Massachusetts, you ought to be embarrassed.
Yeah, I would be. Of course, then again, I wouldn't have done it in the first place.
Remember, and he just recently he beat Kennedy.
Right. And it is but again, this is what the left believes. This is what think about this, giving deference to criminals.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're taking as we said from the very, very beginning, you know, what they're saying is we give the benefit of the doubt. The deference goes to the criminals and not the police.
Right.
That's not a society that I want to live in. And by the way, how I look at every situation, I give deference to nobody.
Right. Exactly.
I wait for the facts to come in.
And in any right. given case, you have to wait for the facts. Right. How do you form any kind of view on it before you know everything?
Now, where I give deference to the police is the honorable profession that they chose. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I look at it and I say they chose to sacrifice.
Right.
So, yes, I will give cops at times the benefit of the doubt, depending on, you know, evidence always, again, leads. But I give them tremendous amount of credit, and I do give them deference over criminals who have no honor.
Right.
They have no honor and bravery. That's not why they've entered their particular profession. See the one in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the one where they rioted over?
Right.
And you see the video come out?
Yes. Yes. I was watching it just
that was rioting over nothing, huh?
Right. Yeah.
As he comes out the door running with the knife.
Charging at the officer.
Yep.
It's very clear.
Oh, by the way, I did post on Facebook yesterday or on Twitter. I know I sent it to a couple of friends. It was out there. Remember back in 2015? That one, anti-police brutality activist who was out there saying we need to get rid of the cops. And so he actually agreed to go into the situations that cops go into, you know, and to fire his gun at the right time.
Right.
And he failed three times.
Yeah.
He failed his own test. He actually passed the cop because he shot them. But he actually ended up shooting. He ended up shooting somebody who came, you know, and again, it was all role playing.
Right.
The police. But he ended up shooting the guy who came with him who wasn't armed. But he came charging. He goes, well, why'd you shoot him? Because he came charging at me. I had no. But he wasn't armed.
Right.
Well, but he could have taken the gun out of it and changed the mind of this police brutality expert who said, oh, yeah, my God, you got split second to make decisions.
Well, do it right along. I mean, you know, think about doing a ride along and where at any given moment the officer you're riding with could be heading toward the danger, as they most often do.
And they showed one case where he approached a guy. You know, it was a police. You know, again, this is all training,
right?
But the police brutality expert, had his gun, and the guy was at the side of the car. And he goes, oh, and the guy was like, no, wait a minute. And then he went to the front of the car where the gun apparently was and came back shooting, and he would have killed the cop. He would have killed him there.
Right.
But he reached behind. He was like, don't go. And the guy went, and he reached, pulled the gun and shot that guy before the guy shot back. Mm-hmm. And again, I thought that was a very important thing to show, especially after Kenosha.
Right.
Because that's where you don't know at that particular point. And these things happen. And we mentioned the one where you could see real clearly was the Washington video from a couple of weeks ago, where those cops were going after that gang member, and the officer was running, and that gun appeared so quickly. I'm still amazed at the hand-eye coordination of that officer and how quickly he got off that shot before that gang member was able to shoot at him.
It was a reminder of how unqualified I am, because think about that.
Yep.
Your human instinct is not to want to take another life. You have to rise above that instinct in order to save a society, in order to save lives most often.
866-90 Red Eye.
Drivers, our friends at PACCAR have a product for your toolbox called PackLink. It provides real-time information about what's going on with your truck. Michelle Moline is manager of product development for PackLink and has more details.
PackLink is basically a mobile diagnostic device that has a Bluetooth chip in it that allows you to use your phone to read why the check engine light is on in your truck. One of our biggest users is actually our own dealerships at PACCAR. Now, our dealers are also reselling this product to customers, and customers, owner operators or fleet drivers, use this while they're on the road so that if they have a check engine light that comes on, they can easily just use their phone to plug this thing in and see what's going on and then either send a report back to their dispatcher to await further instructions or, in the case of an owner operator, possibly even just figure out what needs to be done and go from there. It's a very simple ordering process. Go to PACCAR.com/PackLink, PACLINK. I should mention, too, that if you're a member of OOIBA Association, you receive a 10% discount by logging into the OOIBA website.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Hurricane Sally update. Still a hurricane. Maximum sustained winds now down to 85 miles an hour. So overnight has dropped 15 miles an hour. When we came into work, it was 100 miles an hour sustained winds, so down to 85 miles an hour.
Right.
Moving west-northwest at 2 miles an hour. Still seems to be on the same track where it will hit sometime tonight. Tomorrow morning, the Mississippi-Alabama border.
Yeah, producer Brian pointing out that because it's traveling so slowly, it has that potential to dump a ton of rain, that's what people,
yes.
That's what most forecasters are looking at right now.
Up to 24 inches is what they've been saying in some areas, which is just absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the main worry right now is how slow this thing is moving and the amount of rain that it will drop.
Our own John Trout's going to be on it throughout the day, and we'll be monitoring that as well. Again, Hurricane Sally expected to make landfall sometime late Tuesday into Wednesday morning.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.